Scott and Rick.
I didn't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening.
No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. Looking forward to this weekend. We've had a weekend off. It felt very bizarre, didn't it, last weekend? I didn't know what to do myself. I was sat around the house like, oh, there's nothing to do.
Oh, well, I spoke to the missus for the first time in over a month.
We've had so many races together, though, haven't we? It was, just felt bizarre to have a weekend away. But the Russian Grand Prix is coming our way this weekend. So it's going to be an interesting race. This is the first weekend, of course, that Lewis Hamilton can equal the all-time win record of 91 wins if he wins this Grand Prix this weekend.
Yeah, and apparently Netflix are doing Drive to Survive again this season, and they are encamped with the Mercedes team for the Sochi Grand Prix, which let's hope is a bit of an omen, because you remember last year they joined them for the anniversary Grand Prix of the Germany, and that's when everything went wrong and we had an amazing wet and dry race and Hamilton and Bottas both crashed out. So hopefully, if that's a good omen, we could have some drama this weekend in Russia.
Yeah, and of course, Drive to Survive was just brilliant, wasn't it? Both seasons have been absolutely superb, so already looking forward to that. I remember that was one of the things, because I think the coronavirus had just kind of kicked off, hadn't it, around, it was early last year. And I remember everyone sort of sat at home and there was lockdown looming and all that sort of stuff. And everyone was like, oh, you know, Drive to Survive is coming soon. At least there's something to watch. I think me and you watched it in about 3 hours, didn't we? We just watched it back to back the day it came out. But yeah, always exciting to watch that kind of stuff. But it's been a fairly quiet time, isn't it? It feels like we were just saying this. You know, there's been a lot of action, a lot of races back to back, a lot of movement, a lot of drivers moving around and moving teams. Obviously, Vettel going, announcing he's signed for Aston Martin next year as well, which is the current Racing Point team that are going to become Aston Martin next year. But it feels like we've had a very quiet week, almost like everyone's gone off on a kind of week's holiday and nothing really exciting has happened. But we are back this weekend.
Yeah, a bit of a lull, definitely. Mid-season lull, I think you could call it. We're back in a sort of traditional Tilke design circuit at Sochi. It's a circuit that favours Valtteri Bottas, to be honest. He's had some good results here. He's put it on the podium a couple of times and put it on pole position as well too. So he must be feeling that this is, if he's going to turn it round at all, then this is the weekend for him to try and do that. Of course, you've got Hamilton, who definitely is gunning for that Schumacher record, so he's going to be difficult to beat. And then you've got the Red Bulls. You know, Albon had a great drive in Tuscany, finishing third. But you've got Max, who's basically had two DNFs in the last two races due to engine problems. And they must be really concerned that they've got on top of that for this Grand Prix.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange season because it's been very interesting, very exciting. The midfield have been great. There's been some shock results, which has been brilliant. There's been some shock circuits, which has been great. But it's very much been business as usual for Mercedes, isn't it? They've just been phenomenal out front. Bottas, one or two races in, felt like his head had dropped. And Hamilton is just on incredible form at the moment. It's almost like he's unstoppable. It's like he very rarely makes mistakes, as we know anyway. But he just feels in such a sweet spot of form where he's still got a little bit of youth and a little bit of aggression and a little bit of kind of, you know, balls to the wall kind of driving style, but also has merged that with a bit of, you know, a bit of age and a bit of experience, and he knows what he's doing now. And he just feels like he's hit that amazing sweet spot just as he's about to annihilate all the records by the looks of it as well. But yeah, Mercedes are just completely unstoppable. It's going to be fascinating. I was watching a documentary thing on YouTube about Toto Wolff and about how he started off in his career and all that. And it's going to be fascinating what Toto Wolff does, because you get the impression, if you look back at his career and the kind of stuff he's invested in and the kind of moves he's made in his career so far, he does get to a point where he has a certain amount of success and then he kind of gets, not bored, but he just wants to move on. He wants to try something different. And I kind of feel like we're at that point with him now where he feels, you know, particularly if they win the title this year, there's not a lot more he can do with Mercedes. And I think a lot of these guys at that level get this itch, don't they, where they want to go to another team. You know, the Schumacher did it when he joined Ferrari. And you get these drivers that get this itch and these team bosses, and they want to kind of see what they can do at an underperforming team, or, you know, go to another team or a different environment, different scenario, and see if they can replicate the success. You know, and there's a little part of me that thinks, I wonder if Toto is looking at Aston Martin. We know he's bought a stake in that team as well. So he's got, you know, interests and stakes in Aston Martin. Now, is he looking over there going, I could go in there maybe as the team boss, and maybe I could turn them round and get them to the top of the grid? And, you know, is he thinking like this?
He's got a stake in Williams as well, hasn't he, I think? And also stakes in Formula E, various teams there. His missus, Susie Wolf, obviously highly involved in Formula E at the moment. You know, he could be looking to be the next Ross Brawn. You know, he could be looking eventually to running Formula One, because his path is kind of similar to Bernie Eccleston in a way. He was a team owner who then decided he could do a good job with the sport collectively, and then that's the direction Bernie went in. Maybe Toto is thinking of sort of Formula One world domination. I mean, he definitely has some options, you know, still hasn't confirmed for Mercedes, we don't think, for next year, although we may hear more about that this weekend. Lewis Hamilton hasn't confirmed yet, but I think those two go hand in hand, don't they? I think if Toto fancies a year off, would Hamilton do the same and come back for the new rule changes? I doubt it very much. I mean, he's going to win the world championship this year. He's going to want to just plough on and beat Schumacher's world championship record. So it's a difficult one. I think, you know, the next few weeks will be very interesting on the Toto Wolff side of things.
Yeah, and I do feel like we've still got some surprise driver moves this year as well. You know, there's still quite a few seats available. There's still quite a few that haven't confirmed drivers yet. And to me, it just feels like there's going to be some, you know, 2020 has been such a bizarre year with so many bizarre things happening in such weird ways. I just feel like we've got some sort of twist and turn in the F1 circus as well to come before the end of the year, like a driver signing for a team that you just don't see. You know, is the likes of Kimi Raikkonen, is he going to retire this year? Is he going to carry on? You know, the Vettel move was interesting. And I still think there's a few kind of pods that need moving around to see where we end up. But I think we've got something quite interesting coming still. I don't think it's going to be just a standard boring, this person's staying there, this person's going there, and this person's doing that. I think we've got some excitement to come on that front as well.
Yeah, if you look at it on paper, unconfirmed seats, there are 8 seats still available for next year that are unconfirmed. We know most of them are likely to be filled by the people we think they're going to be filled by. But yeah, realistically, 8 seats still to be filled. Nice to see Fernando Alonso back in the Renault factory this week as he prepares for next season. He's obviously prepared to put the hard work in to work with a team and get on the simulator and get himself fully up to speed. And of course, we had Le Mans at the weekend. Very funny. My missus came back from work on Saturday afternoon and I was watching Le Mans. It was just about to start. And she went, "Oh, I thought there was no Formula One this weekend." I said, no, it's Le Mans. She went, "How long's this going to be on for?" I said, 24 hours, love. It was like, it was almost a divorce. But Le Mans, you know, Paul de Resta won that with his teammates. And that was quite an interesting 24-hour race. Although, you know, we've said this season that Formula One doesn't really miss the crowd in terms of the coverage. I really felt a lack of crowd and atmosphere watching Le Mans at the weekend, because normally there's 200,000 people there and about 80,000 of them are Brits. They just go mad for it and camp for the weekend and get very drunk and just enjoy it all. And that was sadly missing. But it's amazing the way motorsport has coped throughout the pandemic. And as we've said many times on the podcast, Formula One seems to be the best sport on the planet for the way they've coped with with the pandemic. You know, these new circuits that we've never been to before, and some of the older traditional ones like Imola, which is still on the calendar this year. It's going to be fantastic to go back and revisit these places. And I think Formula One as a management company will be looking at the successful races we've had this year at those various different circuits and maybe trying to include some of them on the calendar for next year, which we all hope will be under normal conditions. Although the way we've been put back into a sort of semi-lockdown in the UK at the moment, who knows? I mean, this might still drag on into next year.
Yeah, I know Vettel, amongst others, has come forward and said, you know, the gravel traps have been brilliant and that's what it should be. You know, if we're going to go to these circuits, we are the best drivers in the world. And, you know, if we're going to come off the track and hit the gravel and we're out for the race, that's how it should be. You know, not the fact that we can come off on the tarmac and just get straight back on the track again. So I know he's kind of aired his views on that, which is great. And like you said, you know, for me as a viewer and a spectator, I've not really missed the crowds, but I know a lot of the drivers, I think Ricardo was talking about this as well, a lot of the drivers are saying that they miss the crowds and it does make a big difference. And, you know, I've done some racing in the MR2 Championship and I've never raced in front of a crowd as such. There's always just, you know, spectators and family members that are there. So there's never really a big crowd when I've raced. But I can imagine if you're in the car and you can see and hear the crowd, you know, you're coming around a corner and the roar of the crowd, you know, I can see how it does get the drivers kind of jacked up and does make him perform slightly better. So I imagine the drivers are probably missing the crowds a little bit.
Yeah, I never raced really with a crowd. I raced in the Pro Kart 24-hour series. I did about 20 24-hour races. And normally when you were doing an overnight stint, You were relying on some of your teammates being on the pit wall with the pit board telling you, you know, your time and telling you how long you had left before you needed to refuel. Normally what happened was they all fell asleep and you were just going round the circuit, not a clue which position you were in, when you had to pit, anything like that. You know, the number of times I'd run out of fuel on track because teammates were asleep in the garage, you know. But that's part of it. It's part of the charm of it, I suppose. But yeah, it would be nice to have a crowd, wouldn't it? I think the biggest crowd I've ever had is about 15 people, you know.
And of course, do you call it Sochi?
I would say Sochi, but my pronunciations are terrible.
Yeah, I think I call it Sochi, but I suppose that's like scone and scone, isn't it? It's but yeah, the Sochi. I think I would say Sochi. I've never really thought about it. Sometimes, you know, when you hear a word and you go, how do I say that word? People ask you, do you say scone or scone? I don't. I think I say scone. I'm not sure. but yeah, so I think I say Sochi, but it's the Sochi Grand Prix this weekend in Russia. The kind of Formula One machine rolls on, doesn't it? It's just been faultless. You know, I know we've touched on this a few times, but it's been incredible to just see that they've just got their stuff together. You know, the social distancing has been adhered to pretty much by everybody. The teams have stayed in separate hotels. The media have stayed away from the drivers. And it's fascinating how it's been done. The only thing I've seen a lot of people saying online, and I've noticed this myself, when the drivers talk and their masks start slipping down and they're picking the mask, you know, pulling the mask back up and all that, that does get slightly annoying when you're watching the interviews on TV. But other than that, we've very much got used to this already, haven't we? And it's just become completely normal. And I think in a weird way, it's going to be abnormal to see people without the masks on again, you know, when they're getting interviewed down the line in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, it is weird. You walk into the supermarket near us, no one's wearing a mask. You watch Formula One, everyone's adhering to the rules implicitly. You know, the mechanics in the garage working in hot, sweaty conditions, masks are all on. Everyone's being really sensible, which is great to see, setting an example for the rest of the world, really. Just on the pronunciations, do you say lolly ice or ice lolly?
I say ice lolly.
Oh, because you're southern.
Yeah, but lolly ice is a Scouse thing, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a Scouse or Northern thing, lolly ice, yeah. So, yeah. Okay, well, let's go and have a lolly ice, and then we'll come back after Nikki's given us some stats for this weekend's Russian Grand Prix. Of course, the big stat is that Hamilton can equal Schumacher's record, but he'll have lots of other things to tell us. Here's Nikki.
On F1's seventh visit to Sochi, Hamilton could equal Schumacher's win record, and Mercedes will be aiming to maintain their 107-year winning streak. Here are the top stats to look out for at the 2020 Russian Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton will equal Michael Schumacher's all-time win record if he wins the 2020 Russian Grand Prix. Schumacher won his 91st and final Grand Prix in China in 2006, but he's held the record for most wins in F1 since winning his 52nd race at the 2001 Belgian Grand Prix. Should Hamilton win this weekend, he'll also extend his record of Russian Grand Prix wins to 5 and become the first driver to have won the event in 3 consecutive seasons. He and teammate Valtteri Bottas are the only drivers on the 2020 grid to have previously won at Sochi. Mercedes have won every running of the Russian Grand Prix since it joined the F1 calendar in 2014. In fact, Benz won the only other two Russian Grand Prix, held way back in 1913 and 1914. So technically, Mercedes have never been beaten at a Grand Prix in Russia, which is an impressive 107-year winning record. And Mercedes will be hard to beat in 2020, especially given their recent form. If both Hamilton and Bottas qualify on the front row, this will be Mercedes' 8th consecutive front row lockout. It'll be the first time the team has locked out the front row for 8 consecutive races, since the 8 races between the 2015 Japanese Grand Prix and the 2016 Bahrain Grand Prix. Meanwhile, a front row start for Hamilton would be the 600th front row start for a British driver in F1's World Championship history. Next up, Ferrari, and the team have had at least one driver fail to qualify in the top 10 in all of the last 5 races. Should Sebastian Vettel or Charles Leclerc fail to reach Q3 at the Russian Grand Prix, this would be the first time that at least one Ferrari driver has failed to qualify in the top 10 at 6 consecutive races since the 7 races at the end of the 2009 season. And finally, if Sergio Perez fails to win the 2020 Russian Grand Prix, he'll surpass Nick Heidfeld as the driver to have started the second most F1 races without winning. There's another record on offer for Perez this weekend too. Kimi Raikkonen and Lewis Hamilton are currently tied as the drivers who've contested the most laps at the Russian Grand Prix, each with 317 tours of the Sochi track. Either of them could set a new record for the most Grand Prix laps completed at the track this weekend, while Bottas or Perez have a mathematical chance of overtaking them.
Thank you, Nicky. He's back with more, of course, across the race weekend. I can't even speak. I'm so excited. he's back with more across the race weekend, and you can find him on Twitter at Lights Out. I was just enjoying my ice lolly in Sochi there during that moment. So
I was enjoying my lolly ice in Sochi. Let's move on to sort of this weekend and what we might expect. I mean, obviously, Mercedes dominance, I would imagine, unless the curse of having Netflix with them is going to strike again, which would be interesting. It's a circuit which is, it's one of the very modern circuits, so no gravel runoffs here. Lots of 90-degree corners, which the drivers like. And I must admit, I mean, I play my Formula One PlayStation game, and Sochi is one of my favourite tracks in terms of racing on a simulator level. I think it's really quite good. Loads of opportunities to overtake, especially into turn three before they go around the long left-hand turn four. And this is where we see cars with lots of power do really well off the start, because it's such a long straight down to that. Turn two is just a bit of a kink, and then turn three is a sharp 90-degree right-hander, and that's where we see a lot of overtaking during the first lap, and also potential for some crashes as well. Verstappen needs to have sorted out the power unit problem, because it's hampered him in the last two races, and it means that he gets off the start quite well and then just loses power. So hopefully they sorted that one out.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like Ferrari are going to have a great weekend again either with their lack of power. But this is what I love, is you play these tracks on the Formula One game, like you were saying, and because sometimes I'll watch a race weekend and some of these new tracks, they're all so similar. I kind of put the Formula One on. I watched some of the practice in. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's this track. That's right. I forgot this was this track. And I have to remind myself sometimes which track is which, because some of the modern ones are so similar. But I love the fact that you know what all the tracks are because you play them on the PlayStation. You know all the turns and, oh, this is the one where they got this turn and that turn. So maybe I need to get the PlayStation Formula One game to learn the circuits a little bit easier, maybe that way. But it works for you, doesn't it?
Well, that's, you know, that's just the geek inside me. You know, before we do a podcast, I'll always play the track just so I get an insight into what the drivers may be experiencing, although they're doing it in a, you know, £3 million Formula One car and I'm doing it on a 25 quid gamepad. But it does give you a good sense, I think. And you know, the Russian Grand Prix is, it's around the Olympic Park, isn't it? So the background is not going to be like we've seen recently. It's not going to have the rolling hills of Tuscany in the background, but it will bring different elements of excitement to the Grand Prix itself. And Vladimir Putin normally turns up to threaten people at the end of the race, which is always interesting. But yeah, I think Mercedes, it's their race to win. I'm sure Hamilton will want the win. But like I said before, Bottas has traditionally performed fairly well here. It'd be interesting to see what Renault do, because, you know, Daniel Ricciardo was pretty close to getting on the podium at the Tuscan Grand Prix. He's got that bet with Cyril that if he does, they both have to get tattoos. That would be nice to see. And I think, you know, in terms of Renault, you could sense Cyril's frustration, really, because they are definitely making inroads. And that's probably down, in a lot of ways, to the way Daniel Ricciardo, being an experienced driver, has been able to develop the car with the team over the last season and a half. And Cyril's frustration, of course, is that he's now departing, so they're almost going to have to start that development again. But you don't get more experience in a driver than Fernando Alonso, and the fact that he's already in the factory and getting embedded with the team has got to be a great thing for them.
Yeah, and like I've said before, I'm excited about this, because I feel like Alonso's been very much a driver that's picked the wrong team at the wrong time throughout his career. And I think he could easily have been a 4-5-time world champion had he gone the other way. And I think he's picked a good team at a good time here. I feel like the Renault is coming forward, and, you know, they're going to be the Alpine F1 team next year. And I just feel like he's going to fit in like a glove with that team again and help him develop. Like you say, I saw he picked up his company car already as well, his little Alpine that he's picked up. And talking of the you know, PlayStations and the simulators and stuff like that, I was watching a lot of the drivers have got proper simulators these days. And I think it was Lando Norris I was watching on Instagram, and he's got this simulator and it's incredible. And I'm watching it going, oh, this is like, the steering wheel looks amazing. The seat is perfection. And I'm watching this going, oh, these are great. And I thought, I've got to look this up. I've got to see how much they are.
Yeah.
And I looked it up because it was so great. £53,000.
Oh,
so won't be getting one of them anytime soon. But I mean, this simulator is just absolutely incredible. And, you know, he was talking about how much power the thing uses to get going. But it was as close to the real thing as you could get, I think, this simulator. It just looks incredible.
Yeah, and I think that's the modern Formula One driver now, isn't it? I mean, I doubt Lewis Hamilton has a simulator in his house that he spends all hours on. But, you know, Lando Norris, I think I saw him say somewhere he spends at least 6 hours a day at home on his home simulator. And, you know, that is the modern athlete in the Formula One driver, isn't it? You know, you look at people from all walks of life and all sports. You know, tennis, for instance, you know, they're now training between 6 and 8 hours a day with professional coaches, and they're out on the practice courts. And it's the same for Formula One. You know, back in the days when James Hunt used to drink 3 pints and smoke 40 bifters before he got in the car, you know, it just doesn't happen now. I think the last smoker in Formula One was Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah, and if you, like you say, if you look at the drivers now, you know, if you imagine someone like Hamilton, like you just said, or Raikkonen is not going to go home and get on a Formula One simulator. He's not going to have in his house, and he's not going to go near one.
No.
Whereas the likes of Gasly, Lando Norris, Carlos Sainz, Leclerc, you know, they've all got simulators at home. They all play amongst each other, don't they? They're all on like some electronic PlayStation type championship that they're all driving in together. And, you know, that's how they keep their skills sharp, I guess. But it's each generation moves on, doesn't it? Each job has a, like you say, a completely different way of doing things. And I think the older drivers probably look at these young kids and think, wow, you know, it's literally a computer game for them. Whereas, you know, you go back a few generations, go back to Stirling Moss and people like that, you know, it was all oil, wasn't it? And they're wearing leather helmets, and they've barely got helmets on, and some of them aren't wearing gloves. And like you say, they're smoking, not only smoking, but they're smoking in the car.
Yeah.
And, you know, just how
it's being
changed.
Refueled, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's incredible, isn't it, how things have changed over the years. But that is, you know, from your Stirling Moss all the way through to your Lando Norris, it's night and day, isn't it?
So this weekend then, it's a power circuit, definitely. It's also a circuit that requires a good amount of downforce because of those 90-degree corners. So, you know, I'm hoping that Red Bull can turn it round from the last two weekends and put a good performance in and really challenge the Mercedes. I have a feeling that AlphaTauri, as I'm supposed to call them now, not Tauri, AlphaTauri will do quite well. Pierre Gasly had a really disappointing race in the Tuscan Grand Prix, but obviously Monza won the damn thing, so he's obviously still riding high. Renault have got to be in the mix as well, and I even think that McLaren may see some difference. McLaren don't seem to do particularly well in the circuits that we've seen the last two or three times out. They weren't particularly strong in Monza, and they struggled a bit in Tuscany. I don't know whether it's because of long straights, because their downforce looks pretty good in slower corners. So it'll be really interesting to see the mix of the midfield, because without a doubt, since we've done the last few races, the midfield have come with upgrades. They've made changes. They've tried new parts. Alex Albon, obviously, we revealed that he was racing kind of a development car alongside Max Verstappen, but obviously a podium in a Tuscany Grand Prix. Hopefully he can be on a par or thereabouts with his teammate this weekend. So I think it'll be really interesting. It's time for predictions, and Dr. Mike will be listening with earnest at the moment to see just how wrong we get it. But I think I would definitely say Hamilton for the win, Bottas second, and third, I'm going to say Verstappen.
Yeah, and like you say, I think it's nailed on for Mercedes this weekend, barring any accidents or barring anything very strange. I think Mercedes 1-2, and I agree, Hamilton will win it and will equal Schumacher's record, Bottas second. The greatest thing is at the moment, because the Ferraris are kind of out of the game a bit, you know, like you said, you've got McLaren, you've got Renault, you've got Racing Point, you've got the Red Bulls. They're all kind of fighting it through. So any of those drivers could get a podium. I've got a funny feeling for third, I have a Carlos Sainz or Ricciardo for third this weekend. But
it'd be great
Hamilton
to see Ricciardo on the podium.
Second. Yeah, it would be good, yeah.
And, you know, Leclerc maybe there or thereabouts because there is a massive long home straight on this Grand Prix, but there's some real twitchy bits in the middle of the back straight. It's quite long as well, though, to be fair. So, you know, maybe it'll suit the Ferraris a little bit more. Will Leclerc be able to get nearer the front this time? Who knows? The thing with Ferrari as well is, they say there's no hope until 2022, but it's like they've given up even developing this car this year. They don't seem to be bringing any new upgrades. And you think, well, surely they would be doing that through a normal year anyway. So why aren't they this year? Have they just given up and they're going to build the same car for next year and therefore next year is going to be slightly pants as well? I don't really get that.
No, it's very strange. And it does feel like that. I don't know if that's just a thing as an outsider looking in, because it feels very much like all the heads are down and they've got no passion and no excitement in the team. And I think this is the problem, isn't it, with Formula One? Once you get into whether it be winning ways, like the Mercedes team, where they're so used to winning and everything's great, you get this amazing confidence in the team and everything just gels together brilliantly. Or you go the Ferrari way, where every weekend seems to get worse and worse and worse and the confidence drops and the heads are down and everyone's blaming everybody else and they just get themselves into a complete pickle. And that's the problem with Formula One. It's a very, very mental game.
Well, Formula One is back this week. Weekend, enjoy the Russian Grand Prix. Me and Scott will be back next week to review what we all look forward to this coming weekend.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.